Team.
This is Ian from the Go Team.
And you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Good morning, and you are indeed listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting live in Montreal from McGill University campus. You are listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Candace, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's show, we're going to hear an interview from the IWW's Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. They interviewed the mother of a prisoner who is currently on strike in McConnell Prison in Texas. We will also hear a short news segment from the Final Straw Radio about the recent uprising in a Holman prison in Alabama. Thirdly, we will hear Siddiqui Abdullah Hassan talking to folks from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee about the upcoming strikes in September, organizing in prison, and what folks on the outside can do to support the strikes. But first, as we often do on our show, we'll start with some news. Today we're going to be airing audio, as I had said, from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee about the ongoing strike in Texas prisons. Texas prisoners have been on strike for over 2 weeks now. According to the website supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice is retaliating by locking the prisons down and depriving prisoners of even the standard abysmal human necessities they are forced to provide. Retaliation against people who refuse to work for free is one of the tools prison administrators use to assure that prisoners can continue to be exploited in today's modern-day slave system. The website called for outside supporters to phone prison officials in Texas. Two of the prison administrators they are asking people to call are Brad Livingston and Brian Collier. Here are their telephone numbers. So Brad Livingston, Executive Director of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, can be reached at 936-437-2101 or 512-463-9988. Or you could reach Brian Collier, Deputy Executive Director of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. He can be reached at 936-437-6251. And that's 936-437-6251 or 512-463-9988. The website has more numbers as well as email addresses and sample scripts you can use on the phone. You can check out supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org for more information. And so the time is currently 11:08. You are listening to the Prison Radio Show on CQT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at cqt.ca. The next piece we're going to hear on the show is an interview conducted by folks from the IWW's Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. They interviewed the mother of a prisoner who is currently involved in a strike in McConnell Prison in Texas. Prisoners in Texas began a work strike for better conditions and an end to slavery and human rights abuses on April 4th. Prisoners in Alabama have recently confirmed their commitment to striking this May, while prisoners across the country are calling for nationally coordinated prison shutdowns on the 45th anniversary of the Attica uprising this September.
Talking to a family member of a prisoner at the McConnell unit in Texas, and she's saying that they are being severely retaliated against based on threats of a work stoppage. And can you explain again what you were telling me about that?
Yes, my son says that for the past month that they've been getting the officers to the workers, because they have a garment factory, giving them cases for any little thing that really doesn't amount to anything to try to break them up. And they told them that if they tried to organize and to stop working, that there was going to be severe consequences to their actions. They'd be retaliated on, mistreated, picked on, and it's just total abuse.
So it sounds like some other units have been put on lockdown as a result of the threats of a work stoppage, and I'm guessing it sounds like this McConnell unit is not being put on lockdown because they don't want to lose the revenue from the people working.
Correct. They've been talking about in between inmates that they want to try to organize this for the past month. And they have them as a day-to-day that if they suspect anything, they immediately will be put on lockdown. They haven't organized anything because, like I said, they're severely threatened, severe consequences to their actions. Some of them are seeing them now, and they've done nothing yet, and they're going day by day.
Okay, so they're being severely retaliated against for threatening to stop working for free.
Correct. They want them to do everything for free. They want things the way they want them. If you tell them, no, I'm not going to go to work, they make you. It's like, you're here, you basically have one ball stopped, so you're here, you're being fed, you got to do something.
One of the things, okay, so you're saying they'll catch a case, if which means getting written up, if they don't go to work for free for these corporations that are making money off of them. But if they do go to work, they supposedly get gain time or good time, which can reduce their sentences. But I'm hearing that this gain time or good time is rarely, if ever, actually applied to the people's sentences.
That is very correct. If they say that you're getting good time or getting paid for the work they do, that is a lie. They are not getting either or. They do not get paid. They are working for free. That's what it boils down to. Everything they do in there, it's for free for the facility or for the government or for the factory, but they do not get any good time. They do not get paid. Nothing. Not even a thank you. And they already told several of the people that my son knows in the facility that if they stop working, that they will get major cases just because they refuse to go to work.
Okay, that sounds like slavery to me. And the 13th Amendment in the United States Constitution says slavery is abolished except as punishment for a crime. And if someone refuses to work for free, being threatened or coerced or otherwise intimidated into working for free is just flat out slavery.
Yes, it is. They're incarcerated and they fear retaliation because one of the things that they get to do, like, is for them to go outside to the recreation area. And that's one of the first things that they take off. The phone, the commissary, and that's what they look forward to, going outside at least for, you know, for a couple of hours a day. And that's one of the first things that they take away besides being penalized for whatever they see fit.
Do you have ideas on what we should do to help specifically with the McConnell unit?
The problem is that one of the biggest things that should be brought to light is the media. Because if you call the state for them to do something, they somehow get wind of it, and everything's fine and dandy when people from the state go. Because they warn them before time. Because that has happened. We've had other issues. I've reported to them numerous times for other issues, and nothing gets done. Everything is put under the carpet. Oh, your loved one in there is lying. No, that is not true because this is done this way, and we have records. But all of that is just made-up records. All of that is just flat-out lies.
But you're saying when the media gets involved, then things do improve for the prisoners?
I would think that if we band together and bring the media to this specific area, then yes, I think something could change. But we need not to get our fingers out of the area because the first chance they get, they're going to wiggle out. Like I said, I reported them months ago because the water that the inmates were being served was undrinkable. It stunk. It stunk really bad. And it went like that for months. And when we reported it to the proper channels, nothing was ever done. They said that our loved ones in there were lying, that they were being given this and being given that. And 90% of the stuff on the list that supposedly it was given to them, it is not true. So going through the proper channels doesn't work.
How is the water? Did that situation ever get fixed?
Honestly, no. A lot of the inmates that can afford to buy bottled water, they buy bottled water. They can afford to buy food, they buy food. Because when they go on lockdown, one of the things that they do, they get the food. Sometimes it's spoiled already by the time you get put around. But that's all the inmates kind of work with. So the ones that can afford to buy food, they buy their own food. And the ones that can't, they got to eat what is served, which some of the times, boiled food. And that unit, the conditions of that unit, it's really bad. My son was in one of the cells that had a crack, maybe like about 2 inches wide. when it rained, the water came through there, spiders came in through there, lizards, you name it, it came through there. And when he told them, he goes, oh, why? You're afraid of a lizard? That was their combat. So when are you going to fix this?
And this is on a good day you're talking about. This isn't even when they're being retaliated against. This is just day-to-day conditions.
Exactly, just day-to-day conditions. They get picked on. I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible the way those people get picked on. An animal has better treatment than they have. This attitude that they're superior to you, that, I don't know, it's hard to describe how the inmates are being treated, because it's so unfair. And one of the worst things that they have is that the officers, especially females, they go and tease the inmates, talking to them like animals, you know, cussing at them, degrading them, so the inmate can, you know, can talk back, and then they can give them a case.
And then when they get a case, they have absolutely no chance of any good time being applied to their sentence, because when they get cases, that good time goes away, even though they usually never even get the good time anyway.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And this is your son that's experiencing these conditions?
Yes.
That was the mother of a prisoner in McConnell Prison in Texas being interviewed by the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. For more information about the strikes in Texas, you can visit iwoc.noblogs.org. Next, here on the Prison Radio Show, we have a short segment of William Goodenough from the Final Straw Radio reading out news about the recent uprisings in Holman Prison in Alabama. The piece they are reading comes from itsgoingdown.org.
Quote, things here are tense but festive. The CO and warden was stabbed. It has nothing to do with overcrowding, but with the practice of locking folks up for profit, control, and subjugation. Fires were set. We got control of two cubicles, busted windows. The riot team came, shot gas, locked down, and searched the dorms. Five have been shipped and two put in lockup, said a prisoner at Holman Correctional. This week, prison rebels at Holman Correctional Facility in Atmore, Alabama, staged two riots in 3 days, battling guards, building barricades, stabbing the warden, taking over sections of the prison, and setting a guard station on fire. These actions come as no surprise to those who've been paying attention to the crumbling prison system in Alabama and the increasing level of radicalization of the prison population there. The uprising at Holman and the conditions of Alabama prisons in general provide a unique situation in which anarchist solidarity may prove strategic. Historically speaking, successful prison uprisings have often been the result of a degrading prison system, incompetence, understaffing, weak administration, in combination with a high level of prisoner unity and the development of a strong political subculture within the prison that supports and encourages acts of resistance. These conditions shift the balance of power between prisoners and their captors and allow prisoners more latitude to take bold action. Prison rebels in Alabama report that guards often refuse to enter the cell blocks for months at a time out of fear of attacks. The conditions for rebellion are ripe in the Alabama prison system. The conditions that Alabama prison rebels and anarchists outside of prisons have cultivated over the years have created a situation in which expressions of solidarity from anarchists may have an impact. There is a great possibility that news of solidarity actions will reach prisoners there, and that those actions will make sense to these rebels. Another way in which anarchist solidarity may prove uniquely valuable in this and other situations of prison rebellion is in our capacity to relate to these uprisings outside the framework of reform that the media, the state, and the left will inevitably push them toward. We are already hearing the rhetoric of those outside Holman turning immediately toward reform, appeals to legitimacy in hopes of reaching journalists and liberals, and framing the riots as a last resort after nonviolent methods failed. In the spirit of diversity of tactics, we've compiled a list of some ways to act in solidarity with prison rebels in Alabama. The intention of the list is to find ways to act in solidarity with the many, often contradictory desires of the many different rebels involved in the uprising. And to find a list of those things that you can do, which we do not have time to list out here, you can visit the news source itsgoingdown.org/call-action-solidarity-alabama-prison-rebels for more creative ways to get involved.
That was from the Final Straw Radio based in Asheville, North Carolina. They are reading news from itsgoingdown.org. The entire episode featuring this news, as well as an interview with someone organizing against the expansion of a prison in Orange County, North Carolina, can be found at finalstrawradio.noblogs.org. Again, you are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Carl Maha is turning 25. This year, we'll be celebrating 2.5 decades of innovative feminist choral music at our annual spring concert. The concert will feature a large-scale sonic choreography composed by founding director Kathy Kennedy, which transforms the quotidian details of women's lives into a monumental sound event, La Marée des Jours. Join us on Saturday, May 7th at 8 p.m. in the amphitheater at Le Jésus, 1200 Rue Bleury. Tickets are available at the door or online at kermaha.org. That's C-H-O-E-U-R-M-A-H-A.org. This is a co-production with CKUT.
Une balle, deux balles, pas assez de balles, trois. Un mort, deux blessés, l'affaire Villanueva. Un citoyen tué par la police fait l'effet d'un feu de bail. Touché comme sujet, pars-en pas au bye-bye. Plus facile de faire référence à Montréal noir, Montréal nord, Montréal marde, Montréal mort. Plus d'investissement conséquent, monsieur le maire. Et peut-être que Montréal noir serait Montréal art. Prendre les citoyens pour des caves. C'est pas juste l'économie qui fait en sorte que l'heure est grave. On veut te faire peur en parlant des gangs de rue. Je suis noir et je t'avoue que moi, j'en ai rarement vu. Mais j'ai connu des hommes qui se sont perdus dans le froid de la rue. Je parlerai pas de gangs, mais je parlerai de mauvais choix d'individus. Blanc, noir, brun, jaune et même bleu. Le crime organisé se fout de ton thème pour mon vieux. Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne l'heure juste? Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne l'heure juste? Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne l'heure juste? C'est pas le citoyen qui est stupide, non. Je crois que c'est le système qui frustre. Va pas vivre là-bas, y'a trop de latinos, trop d'arabes, trop de noirs. C'est pas dans l'absence de couleur que se cache l'espoir. C'est quand la dernière fois que tu t'es fait braquer une arme par une gang de rue de ta belle banlieue agréable. C'est pas que le problème existe pas, c'est qu'il existe presque pas, mais on te le dit pas. Parce que plein de gens tirent bénéfice des problèmes semi-visibles. Moi tout ce que je vois ce sont plein d'organismes mercantiles. La ville de Montréal fait porter le blâme aux enfants. Si Freddy est mort, c'est qu'ils ont agi en délinquant. Nous on voit de l'outrage à la justice et manque d'empathie de la part de celui qui représente le point de vue de la mairie. C'est tannant de constater ce que vit Danny Villanueva. Calmons-nous un moment et pensons vraiment à ce qu'on élève. On veut le déporter, jeter le bébé avec l'eau du bain. En ne faisant croire que le bébé est pas à nous mais aux voisins. Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne l'heure juste? Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne l'heure juste? Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne l'heure juste? C'est pas le citoyen qui est stupide, non, je crois que c'est le système qui est trouvé. La police qui enquête sur la police, une grosse joke. Commission des droits de la personne, une grosse joke. Mandat du protecteur du citoyen, une grosse joke. Ministre de la sécurité publique, une grosse joke. Décision de pas porter d'accusation, une grosse joke. On dirait qu'on prend tous les citoyens pour servir et protéger est devenu une grosse job. On ne peut s'empêcher de prendre le système pour une grosse job.
pas se mentir, le déni ici, ça date pas d'hier. Regardez le traitement réservé aux nations premières. Pourquoi devrait-on espérer avec tant d'impunité? La majorité visible a l'impression dérangée. Si t'es si ouvert d'esprit, mais donc nos noms sur tes boulevards. On veut exister pas seulement dans tes corridors et couloirs. Peut-être que si vous nous verrez aussi comme vos enfants. C'est pourquoi notre Freddy Villanueva est si important. Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne leur juste? Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne leur juste? Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne leur juste?
C'est pas le citoyen qui est stupide, non, je crois que c'est le système qui rouille.
Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne leur juste? Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne leur juste? Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne leur juste?
C'est pas le citoyen qui est stupide, non, je crois que c'est le système qui est frustré.
Combien de morts va-t-il falloir avoir pour que le système nous donne leur juste?
Moi, ma loi, ça serait, tu rentres n'importe qui chez nous, il y en a un dans ta famille qui fait une gaffe, c'est toute ta famille qui retourne à la maison.
That was the song Combien de morts by Emrakul, a member of the Montreal-based hip-hop collective Community Vibe Collective. The song is about police violence, specifically about the murder of Freddy Villanueva by the Montreal police, as well as racial profiling and police brutality against Black folks in Montreal Nord. Although the song is always relevant, we're playing it on today's show here on the Prison Radio Show, specifically in recognition of the recent killing of Jean-Pierre Bonny, a Black man from Montreal Nord who was shot and killed by the SPVM earlier this month. To end our show today, we have a piece which comes from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. It is an interview with Siddiqui Abdullah Hassan, who is currently incarcerated in Ohio and has appeared on the Prison Radio Show before. Imam Hassan was the prayer leader and spokesperson for Sunni Muslims during an uprising at the Southern Ontario Correctional Facility at Lucasville in 1993. Hassan is currently on death row in Ohio.
So the thing that I would like to mention is that a lot of people have been asking me questions about not only the national movement that's scheduled for September, but they want to know, they noticed that all across the country, even if right in your own state, on Rikers Island in New York, Texas, Alabama, Holman, Ohio State Penitentiary, a Southern Ohio Correction Facility, and many other places throughout the country, Texas, Virginia, you name it, there seems to be an ongoing resistance movement that is going on. And what is causing this resistance? And the best way that I could actually put that is that repression or oppression breeds resistance. And when you have this type of oppression, persecution, tyranny, and disregard for human life, human suffering, whether it be psychological, physically, or otherwise, it all amounts to torture. And at any given time in this country, you have 80,000 people that are actually in solitary confinement. And the experts and commentators, they have already said that long-term solitary confinement is detrimental to the mental, the psychological, and the physical health of human beings. But the powers that be, they do not care. I mean, when they tell the people in the public something, that we're trying to rehabilitate these people, we're trying to prepare them for their reentry back into society, and they find all these euphemism words are the right things to say, it's only actually for public consumption. Because those of us that are behind enemy lines, we understand emphatically that that is a myth, that is a blatant lie. There's no such thing, for the most part, of rehabilitation in the system. Not when it comes to the prison cracks actually rehabilitating people, because basically what they are doing, they are inducing people to actually fail. Statistics shows that when people have regular communication with their family and when they have support from their family in the community, the recidivism rate, that is, those who are returning back to incarceration, a life of imprisonment, it is reduced in half. So if the system is actually trying to rehabilitate people or trying to have people to have that connecting relationship between themselves, their family, friends, and
this call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Let me reiterate that. If the prison authorities or the prison crafts was really interested in rehabilitation and wanting the people to have that connection and relationship between themselves, their family, friends, and loved ones, and their supporters, then they will be creating the means and the circumstances to help them to have to maintain that beautiful relationship. But take, for example, in Ohio, you have people that are indigent. There was a time when they would give a person a free letter, meaning that the state will provide it, and the person can, on a weekly basis, and the person will have the opportunity to write whomever they want to, stay in touch with them. But they have only reduced that now, so a person only get one state free letter per week. Just recently, last year, when myself and some other comrades here was on a hunger strike here at this institution, the FCC stepped in, the Federal Communication Commission, they stepped in and reduced the phone calls here and throughout the country on a large scale. Take, for example, in Ohio, for me to make a call from one city in Ohio to another city will actually cost $5 for a 15-minute phone call. And for me to call from here anyway out of the state of Ohio, it would be anyway from $15 to $22 for a 15-minute call. That was extortion. So if it is actually true that they want prisoners to maintain communication with their family, why are they charging? Why weren't they charging these exorbitant rates for people to maintain communication? Why it is that people in California, all the way to Mississippi and to New York and various different places, away from their family. Family members cannot pay for these expensive phone calls. They would not be able to travel the distance to visit their loved ones. So again, all the stuff what the prison authorities or the prison craft are telling the people in public, that is only for public consumption. It does not really register. Prisoners know it is, again, that we understand emphatically that it's a blatant lie. It's just a myth. So when you're dealing with this type of oppression, persecution, and forbidding us from maintaining contact with our family, friends, and loved ones.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
It's one of the problems among many problems that prisoners feel the need to actually challenge. And just tonight, I was watching on 60 Minutes before I went out for a rec for a couple of minutes and made prayers with one of my brothers. On 60 Minutes, they were talking about the problems they have on Rikers Island, about how the prison authorities, the people in authorities like captains, et cetera, people being mentally disturbed, and they place these people in solitary confinement, and they give them no medical attention. They be suffering from mental illness. Some of them have diabetes and other medical problems. They give them no attention, and the captains and those in authorities would say, look, if it's not for cell extraction, or if it's not a body, meaning a person has been hung themselves, killed themselves, don't be bothering me with that nonsense, that non-crap or nonsense. And as a result, people are actually dying. So when you have this kind of disconnect, of this vindictiveness among the prison authorities, because a person comes to prison, they, you know, media portrays it the way the power that we want to portray to the concerned citizen society, that we are the enemies of society. And when you create this enemy, us against them, then people have the tendency to treat us like that. But as I always try to point out to people, a human being does not lose their value, or their value is not diminished just because they're incarcerated. I mean, people make bad mistakes. Some people are forced not by necessity to try to provide for their family. They can't get jobs. We understand that a job is important support. It's important to help you get the things that you actually need. And when a person cannot provide for them family, in certain situations, they are forced by necessity. But that one mistake that they made out of necessity, it doesn't define who they are. You have the cause and effect. The effect is that they committed a crime against their will. They didn't want to do it, but they were forced by necessity. But what was the cause? It was man inconsiderateness toward other men, not wanting to give him a job or not wanting to give her a job, that prompted them to do the things that they actually did. And another thing that people are actually focusing on, and the main issue that we're focusing on, is that we are commodities. As those behind enemy lines, corporate America and the powers that be, they consider us to be commodities. Just like during the time of slavery, the slave master would try to get a healthy person in one family to mate with a woman to mate with a man and try to produce more and more kids than they possibly can, because the more kids they have, they will raise them, they will tour the field, they will do all the labor, and they will benefit financially, economically as a result of these many offsprings coming into existence. And when we take what happened back then and look at what's happening today, nothing has changed. There's nothing new up under the sun. It's the same revolving door, the same nonsense that exists back then, the same nonsense that exists in today. One of the things I would try to point out, take, for example, in California, you have anywhere from 3,800 to 4,000 prisoners that are...
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
You have 3,800 to 4,000 prisoners that are firefighters. And we know in the West Coast in California, you're always getting fires that are being started accidentally, intentionally, whatever the reason, it doesn't matter. Those prisoners are firefighters. They're out there putting their life on the line, putting out the fires. And if one or some of them die in the process, the prison crafts, they do not tell the media that these was prisoners. They tell them that they was firefighters. But my point is this. The point I'm trying to drop home is this. If a prisoner can be a firefighter and put out fires and put their lives on the line, and if they can work for the state and being paid for nothing, nothing or very little for their work, these same prisoners can get out in society, and if they apply for a job as a firefighter or apply for some other meaningful employment, they have to fill out the box, and in filling out the box, they have to say they're the convicted felons, and as a result, they're being denied the job. People do not call them back. But if it's good for the goose, it should be good for the gander. What I mean by that, if they can work for the establishment or work for the state while they're incarcerated, and they label it good, why is it their labor cannot be good and healthy for the community upon their release? It's simple. They're exploiting people for financial gains, and when they're being released from prison, they put them in a catch-22. They are inducing people to fail because now a person has a family, they have no means of support, they feel less than a man or less than a woman when they cannot provide for their children, their spouse, and as a result, they're being forced by necessity to commit various different crimes. And basically what we're saying is that enough is enough. It has come to a head, and we're unifying our efforts, and we understand that there are strengths and actually numbers, and we're going to challenge this. Because one of the most deadly and destructive diseases that is affecting us as a community, both inside and outside, from behind enemy lines and those citizens out of society, is disunity. But now we're coming together, those behind enemy lines, along with our family, friends, loved ones, and supporters out of society, and we say enough is enough, and for once and for all, we're going to bring this situation to a head. And that's just some of the things I have narrated, just popped off the tip of my head, but there are many issues that are going on that people in the public are not aware of. And a lot of time what happens, too, when you're looking at mainstream media, they have demonized prisoners. They have put prisoners in a position as being some of the most low-down, psychological, depressing thing in the world. And like I said earlier, they have considered us to be the enemy. And when you consider someone to be your enemy, you have become detached and desensitized toward their concerns, the things that affect them as human beings, because you see them as an enemy and you're going to treat them as such. But I wish to reiterate, a human being does not lose his or her value. Our value is not diminished because of our incarceration. People make mistakes all the time. But I'm a firm believer that in order for a person to make a mistake, he or she must be willing to accept full responsibility from that mistake. We still maintain our humanity. We're still a human being. We have not lost our value. And I will be the first to tell you that in spite of the decades that I have been behind enemy lines, I have the same tools, the same potentials, and the same humanity, and the same capacity.
You have 1 minute remaining.
And the same capacity for development that every other human being have. And that's not to toot my own horn. I know many brothers and sisters behind enemy lines that have those same tools, those same potentials, that same humanity that any other human beings have. But the thing is, because society, especially the media, they have demonized us and tried to take away our humanity, people in society, for the most part, have become less sympathetic toward what goes on behind enemy lines. But we're trying to put a new face on that, and God willing, we're going to succeed in what we're trying to do. Come what may, and let the wind blow wherever. We're going forward in the spirit of our predecessors.
Sure. We wanted to know a little bit about, you know, as much as you're able to say about how
you guys, how y'all have inside have been organizing for the actions plan for the anniversary of Attica?
Well, at first, there was a discussion. You know, there's really different ways to communicate. In my state, we don't have the problem with inmate-to-inmate correspondence. In Ohio, we can communicate with any inmate we choose to. But in other states, they do not have that luxury. But there's other ways to get around that. I mean, it can be as simple as someone coming to visit me. I have them deliver a message to one of the supporters from the Free Alabama Movement out of society. And either they will convey it by phone or they will convey it on a visit.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
And for those of us that are well-read, we are vivid readers, and we do an extensive amount of reading, and we see the various different problems that are going on behind the eye. It troubles us, and when we see brothers and sisters write articles, and we see the issue that they are speaking to, and we see the revolutionary spirit that is actually in them, then we try to create the means and circumstances to reach out to these individuals who some of our outside supporters. So at first, we had considered the possibility and probability of doing this on August the 1st, which would be Black August. And we decided, no, that perhaps they exclude some of our European brothers, the brothers of other ethnic groups. They may be not fond of the word Black August. So then, after we had the assassination of the revolutionary, one of our elders, Hugo Yogi Berra Pinel in California, after being in solitary confinement for 46 years, he was killed by two Aryan Brotherhood, and it was orchestrated by the corrections officers and stuff. We thought about the possibility of doing that, but again, we still may be excluding some of our European brothers. That's not to take any away from our elders. I mean, we hold him dear to our heart, but in the final analysis, we came up, well, look, everybody can agree to what happened in Attica. It was man injustice toward man that compassed those brothers, white, black, Puerto Ricans, young, old, et cetera, to come together and to check on the powers that be. So that is how we came up with on the 45th anniversary of Attica. But it was not the initial date. We were just discussing the pros and cons of what would be more feasible, where everybody would feel a part of this struggle and say, look, enough is enough. We have to go forward again in the spirit of our righteous predecessors. Whether it be Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Marcus Mathias Garvey, even Nat Turner, it doesn't matter. Those brothers, they took a stance against injustice, and as the late Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And the same problem is going on here in my state. They're going on in the state of Alabama, Texas. It's going on actually around the country. But we have been fighting sometimes the powers that be individually, meaning that we've been doing it within the institutions. Sometimes that we have did it on a statewide level. And people have...
This call is originally from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Prisons have been silent in form of complaints. We have a problem. We're supposed to go through this complaint system. We complain to the person of authority, and if they don't resolve it to our satisfaction, we file a grievance, and the grievance will go to someone still within the institution, but it's his or her job to oversee these problems and try to resolve them to the prisoner's satisfaction. But they're all part of the same system. And it's hard to get anything resolved. And then if you're dissatisfied with the institution inspector has said, then you can file it to the chief inspector office, which means it would be the capital of each state. And we still haven't, for the most part, been able to get anything resolved. After that, prisoners have went on hunger strike. Prisoners have been vandalizing, tearing up stuff, burning stuff, destroying state property. And they end up taxing themselves because the state would end up charging you the money that your family send you. They take it out of your account. So it comes to the point, look, we don't try almost everything up under the sun. And we get a little to something accomplished, but the problem is still going on. So how do we deal with this problem once and for all? I mean, to the state, we are commodities to them. They are benefiting from us, and we come to the conclusion that the best way to deal with them is to challenge them economically. We live in a capitalist society, and one of the ways to hurt these people is to hurt them by destroying or diminishing their overhead or their profits in their wallets and pocketbooks. So that's the point that we reach now, that, again, enough is enough, and we're going to push that. And if this doesn't work, then we still don't give up. Mm-hmm. It's a struggle. The word I like to use is jihad, and it's a misunderstood word by those that are non-Muslim. The word jihad comes from the word jihada, which means to strive, to struggle, to exert oneself by way of speech, by way of writing, and as a last result, if it means armed struggle, if it's weapon, if necessary. So we've reached the point that this is a jihad. We're struggling against the powers that be that are trying to continuously torture us and put us in a position that we have no choice. So it comes to that point where we're just going to move forward. And if this doesn't work, then keep trying. We're not going to give up, because our fight is a righteous fight. And if we die in the process, so it be. We would die as martyrs, taking on the establishment from exploiting us, economically exploiting us.
Thank you, Brother Hassan. I think we're all incredibly moved by that, especially given your situation and how everyone's fighting back under such difficult conditions. I don't know if there are any more questions that people have from the audience that they can think of now.
Yeah. What are some of the ways that people on the outside can get hurt, the walls of the prison administrations as well as the companies that are benefiting from prison labor?
Did you get that?
Can you repeat that? Can you repeat the question? And then if someone else has a question, can you have them come up to the phone because I need to hear more clear? But for now, can you repeat his question?
Yeah,
or could you have them come to the phone and repeat it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the question was, what are the ways that people on the outside can hurt the wallets of those who are benefiting from prison labor and exploitation and slavery in prisons?
Well, one of the decisions that was made from the brothers in Alabama, that we're going to target, first of all, one of the corporate companies that are benefiting from prisoner labor, that would be McDonald's. And McDonald's is not the only one that is benefited, but we chose them. And I can't recall if they mentioned why, or if I read anything why they mentioned why, but me analyzing the situation, I feel that it would be best to challenge one corporation or one people that exploiting prisoner labor as opposed to many at one time. Because if we spread our wings too far and take on 10 corporations, then they may not feel the financial pinch of the financial crunch because we got our scrimp spreaded in too many directions. But if we focus on McDonald's and we pick it outside their place and we have people to boycott, and we and a lot of college company, college students or colleges and universities, they are now divesting in corporations that are exploiting prisoners' labor. So the best thing that people can actually do is we're going to be making up flyers and information pamphlets and circulating them in due time. But what people can do, they can help us protest outside of McDonald's. They can help us to do leafleting, protesting, picking outside these establishments. And if we focus on one establishment and when they begin to feel the financial crunch as a result of our stiff resistance that we're putting up, it will, God willing, send a message to the other corporations. You're not safe. We're coming at you, too. We just chose this one first, and we're coming at you. So either you straighten up your act or you suffer the consequences. It's just simple. We have to hit these people where it actually hurts. And, again, it's in their wallets and in their pocketbooks. And people can also help, too, by helping us to send a message on Facebook, spreading the message, because we're not trying to sweep it up under the rug. We're not trying to keep silent what our intentions are. No, we go.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Because in order for people in this, it's like now, I'm in the confines of my cell. And if I were to take the ink pen or piece of pencil and write something in the palm of my hand, you cannot see that. Or even if someone was in my cell with me, they cannot see what I see unless I turn it around and show them what I've written in my hand. So we have to be able to, instead of allowing people in society to define us, we have to speak for ourselves instead of being defined and spoken for by others. We have to expose what is going on and once again make people care about the quality of life or the lack of the quality of life that exists in these prisons. So we hope that those that are present today, if they know someone who has radio stations, television stations, who can help us get on college campuses, who can help us get inside the churches, or various different events, that they can help us organize events where we can call in and enlighten the people and share what is truly going on behind enemy lines, that would be a blessing. Because the more people become aware of what's going on, mainly what they would say, I didn't know that was going on. Yes, the reason you don't know what's going on, the reason for 23 years that the state of Ohio has not allowed media to come and interview myself and some of my other comrades, or whether it be on video or audio recording, because they try to suppress our message. They portray us as being, again, some of the most low-down psychological thing in the world. We're incorrigible, we're uncaring, we're unsympathetic monsters. We're beyond being able to be reformed. That is the narrative that they're giving the people in the public. But when people had the opportunity to speak with us over the phone, in our presence, to correspond with us, they see a different story. These people are educated. They are very compassionate. They are serious about what it is they are fighting for. They're willing to put their lives on the line. The few privileges that they give us, they don't care about that. Again, come what may and let the wind blow wherever. People can see there's a different side to us than the media and the public is trying, or certain members of the public is trying to portray. So again, you can help us by helping us get our message out. That would be the most important thing that you could actually do.
In what way does McDonald's use prison labor?
Like I said, that decision was made by the Conrads in Alabama, from the Free Alabama Movement. And my thing, I've always tried to be supportive of people. I know they are, from my understanding, I think they are McDonald's, perhaps Wendy's, and some of these other fast food establishments. They have prisoners making beef patties, et cetera, like that. So if one of the brothers or sisters from Alabama is on the line of the supporters on the outside, they would be in a better position to address that. Again, like I said, I didn't think it would be wise to take on more than one establishment, and they made the decision with regards to McDonald's, and I hear and I'll support their decision.
Another question that we had was if you could say anything that you know about the brothers in Texas who were on strike.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Go ahead, repeat your question.
About if you know anything, or even if you just have thoughts about the brothers in Texas who are on strike right now.
Yes, I commend them, because from some of the material that I was reading,
you have one unit remaining.
Some of the material I was reading from Brother Bruce, I think it was Kevin Malik Washington, he was saying that he was committing to brothers in California, how they had 30,000 soldiers from the beginning to initiate a hunger strike. And he was saying that in Texas, you're not going to find that type of unity. It's hard for people to miss one meal. And I understand that. I mean, missing meals is not an easy matter. It takes a lot of strength, a lot of discipline to do that. So when I heard that Texas was saying enough is enough, they're tired of being treated as slaves, and they're going to challenge the problem that was going on, I commend them. I basically salute them. So commend them on what they're actually doing. And brothers around the country are seeing that they're stepping up to the plate, and some are planning on joining them as this continues to go on. So, yes, we commend those brothers, and it's about time that they step up to the plate. I mean, they've reached that point. Like I say, repression breeds resistance, and that is what's happening. They've tried.
Thank you for using GTL.
That was Siddiqui Abdullah Hassan talking about the upcoming strikes in U.S. prisons in September and answering questions from an audience in Brooklyn. You can hear the entirety of the audio from his talk at lucasvilleamnesty.org. The time is presently 11:56. You've been listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca online. You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Thursday, May 12th at 5 p.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you are in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. Feel free to write us at the Prison Radio Show or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Candace and I've been your host for today. Stay tuned for Butcher T's Noontime Cuts coming up next.
Again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a man. You want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
C-K-U-T, ma radio communautaire.